for John. Did you hear what we said? Young John Crawford should not be dead.
If he did nothing wrong, if he did not commit a crime, then why is he not here with us?
Ten years ago this week, a series of events happened in a matter of seconds that would change many people's lives forever.
Hardly a day goes by, you know, where I don't think about the incident and the whole aftermath.
Why aren't Black lives as important as the lives of others?
Would I have picked it up and walked around the store with it? And the answer is no. I would not have.
He was not an active shooter. He was only a kid shopping at Walmart.
I started asking myself, what is justice?
This is A Matter of Impact, a documentary looking back at the decade since a police officer killed John Crawford III in Beaver Creek, Ohio, inside a Walmart. A lot has happened in the last 10 years, including lawsuits, settlements, and two national uprisings protesting police violence. This hour, we'll hear from John Crawford III's father, supporters and activists, and the former mayor of Beaver Creek, as they look back at the decades since Crawford's death. We'll learn how local community organizers have changed their views on justice and policing since 2014, and we'll explore the legacy of this tragedy, what has been created here in the Miami Valley as a result, and what advocates are still hoping to see. I'm WYSO Community Voices producer Julio Mateo. I'll be your host for the hour. I hope you stay with us. On August 5th, 2024, John H. Crawford Jr., John H. Crawford III's father, drove from Tennessee to Ohio as he has done every year for the past 9 years. When Mr. Crawford and his grandchildren arrived in front of the Beaver Creek Walmart at around 5:30 p.m., a small crowd had already gathered.
And we're going to kick this off with some words from Pastor Campbell, my big brother, and then we're going to go into some poetry, but we're going to let him kick it off with some words.
Talis Gage announced the first guest.
Thank you, Chris.
Praise the Lord, everybody. Praise the Lord. And I just want to start off first just having a word of prayer.
Mr. Crawford also said a few words.
It's good to see you. Whether it's 1, 100, or 1,000, you know, I appreciate you. God bless you all. Eternally grateful for you doing it. But the main thing, I wanted you all to get an update from the legal side.
Attorney Michael Wright, who has represented the family since 2014, provided a legal update.
We're currently in civil litigation against Walmart, as everybody knows. We have a trial date set for February the 3rd, okay, in front of Judge Rice against Walmart. So February 3rd, 2025.
And before wrapping up the memorial, Gage mentioned one more action.
Right now I'm in the process of fighting and pushing to get this street name changed to John Crawford Way.
Gage has been attending City of Beaver Creek Council meetings and submitted a formal letter to request the street name change. That effort is still ongoing.
An unguarded moment of casual air. You pick up a toy that was lying there. And then a vicious lie set the stage for a madman's careless act of rage. Without a thought or hesitation, the life of a father, a son, was taken. The wheels of justice have refused to turn. A heinous lesson that will not be learned. No justice was attempted. No justice was achieved. In the wake of this travesty, a decade of grief. This long protracted fight goes on and on and on. Forever, we will see justice for John.
This was Cheryl Smith later that night, at the Foundry Theater in Yellow Springs, where a crowd of about 100 people gathered to remember Crawford. There were speakers, films, and poets. Amaha Selassie led the audience in song.
What
The World Choir also performed. Finally, Mr. Crawford took the stage. He explained that he was struggling a bit on the 10th anniversary of his son's death.
When you have racism and prejudices, and when you have these things in our societies, you know, they can come at any time, any given time, like a thief in the night, somewhere I once read. And it showed up. Demonism showed up, showed his face. And as a result, my son, my child, is not here.
But one thing did make Mr. Crawford light up as he was ending his remarks.
But on a good note, I want to introduce you to two people. This young man is John Henry Crawford IV. This is his own. And this young man is my other grandson. This is Jaden Carlito Crawford.
Hi.
And they are my reason for living. Thank you so much. Love you all. Thank you.
Those were John Crawford III's two sons. They were a year and a half and 4 months old when their father was killed at age 22. They are now 11 and 10. Later this hour, we'll hear more from Mr. Crawford. You're listening to A Matter of Impact, a look back at the decade since John Crawford III was killed on WYSO. I'm Julio Mateo. All this commemoration, memorialization, and pain, this all goes back to one moment on the evening of August 5th, 2014. Next, we'll briefly review that story. A warning to listeners, this section does contain some disturbing audio of a police shooting. On August 5th of 2014, John Crawford III had just turned 22. And was in the process of enrolling at Kentucky State University, his father's alma mater. Crawford had two children with Lizzie Johnson, and he was in the early stages of a romantic relationship with Tasha Thomas, whose family lived in Greene County, where Beaver Creek is located. On August 5th, Thomas and her family were celebrating her cousin's army reassignment to Hawaii at her aunt's house in Fairborn. Thomas went to pick up Crawford from where he lived outside of Cincinnati, and bring him back to her family cookout, stopping for ingredients for s'mores on the way. Shortly after 8 p.m., Crawford and Thomas walked into the Beaver Creek Walmart. While at the store, Crawford answered a call from Johnson, his children's mother, and wander around the store by himself while immersed in his phone conversation. Crawford picked up a BB gun from the sporting goods aisle, and then carried it with him as he continued to walk around Walmart, distractedly talking on the phone. On the other end of the phone, Johnson was at Crawford's mother's house near Cincinnati, with the kids and grandparents.
Beaver Creek 911, where's your emergency?
I'm at the Beaver Creek Walmart. There's a gentleman walking around with a gun in the store.
Has he got it pulled out?
Yeah, he's like pointing at people.
What does he look like?
He's a black male, probably about 6 foot tall.
While Crawford and Thomas talked on the phone, another shopper, Ronald Ritchie, a 24-year-old white man, called the police and claimed that Crawford was carrying a loaded rifle and pointing at people.
My name is Ronald Ritchie. He just pointed at like two children.
Okay, I do have officers there.
Just moments later, Beaver Creek Police Sergeant David Darko and Officer Sean Williams ran in, guns drawn. They stopped at least one shopper to ask them where to find the alleged shooter, but no one seemed aware of any shooter or emergency. As soon as they saw him, Darko yelled a command at Crawford to drop the weapon. Surveillance video later showed Crawford appearing startled in response. Less than a second later, Williams walked around Darko and shot Crawford twice.
Sir, what's going on?
Crawford collapsed on the floor in the pet food aisle. Over the phone, Johnson heard Crawford say, "It's not real," likely referring to the BB gun he was carrying. Johnson called for Crawford's parents and put the call on speaker. Crawford's parents listened in as Crawford was fighting to stay alive. Then they rushed toward Beaver Creek. After the police shots went off, Angela Williams, another shopper, suffered a heart attack and died shortly after. And later that evening, Beaver Creek detective Rodney Kurt aggressively interrogated Tasha Thomas about the gun that Crawford had allegedly brought into the store.
That man had the weapon when you picked him up, he had it in your car or something. You understand that we're investigating a serious incident. You lied to me and you might be on your way to jail. So I'm going to be very clear about this.
I swear to God.
After an hour and a half of interrogation, Kurt told Thomas this.
Well, to let you know, unfortunately, John has passed away as a result of this. I don't know any other way to tell you. I mean, what happened there wasn't a good thing, and as a result of his actions, he is gone.
For the first 48 hours after Crawford was killed, the media described Crawford as a suspect. On August 7th, the public learned that Crawford was actually carrying an unloaded BB gun, also known as an air rifle or pellet gun, that he picked up from the shelf. Surveillance video later showed that at no point did he aim the BB gun at anyone. But something else happened that same week. Something that would dramatically change how the Miami Valley responded to John Crawford's death.
Black lives matter! Black lives matter! Black lives matter! Black lives matter!
On August 9, 2014, just 4 days after Crawford's killing, Officer Darren Wilson shot and killed Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. The killing of Brown, a young, unarmed black man like Crawford, sparked nationwide protests calling for police to stop killing black people. Suddenly, Crawford's story was part of a much larger movement, the Black Lives Matter movement. Organizers affiliated with the Ohio Student Association, Black Lives Matter Miami Valley, and others started to mobilize, engaging in an extensive list of actions, which we will get to in the next segment. Later in August, then Attorney General Mike DeWine announced that a grand jury would convene and he assigned Special Prosecutor Mark Pipmeyer to lead the team presenting evidence to the grand jury. Throughout September, protesters were demanding for the officers to be indicted, for the surveillance video to be released to the public, and for the U.S. Attorney General to investigate Crawford's killing. Pipmeyer held a press conference on September 24th.
The grand jury listened to all the evidence, voted on it, and decided that the police officers were justified in their use of force that day.
Pipmeyer did say Crawford was not at fault, but neither were the police officers.
You know, Mr. Crawford did not commit any crime that day. I don't know why he carried the gun like he did, but again, as we told his parents, he didn't commit a crime. He didn't do anything wrong.
The Crawford family and their attorneys held a press conference in response. Here's Attorney Michael Wright.
This was not Columbine. This was not Sandy Hook. It's insulting to this family that Pipmeyer mentioned Mr. Crawford in those same sentences. He was not an active shooter. He was only a kid shopping at Walmart.
Crawford's father also spoke.
If he did nothing wrong, if he did not commit a crime, then why is he not here with us?
That same week, the Walmart surveillance video was released to the public, and the U.S. Department of Justice opened an investigation into the case. The legal action will go on for years. That December, the Crawford family filed suit against the city of Beaver Creek and Walmart for partially causing the wrongful death of their son. The Beaver Creek suit was settled for $1.7 million in 2020, though the city admitted no wrongdoing. The Walmart case is still ongoing. In 2016, organizers also pushed for consequences for Richie, the 911 caller. But the same special prosecutor, Pip Meyer, chose not to charge him with anything. And in 2017, the U.S. Department of Justice closed its investigation. They said that they couldn't prove, beyond a reasonable doubt, that Officer Williams violated Crawford's civil rights. Up next, we will hear from organizers who recall how their experiences during this time transformed their lives. You're listening to WYSO. Amaha Selassie and Darshil Kaur both started to mobilize immediately after Crawford was killed. They are longtime friends. Selassie was born and raised in the Dayton region.
Who is Amaha Selassie? Someone seeking to be a friend of humanity that believes in community. Someone who loves a kayak, a public sociologist, professor, and I see cooperation as the moral force for human development.
Darshil Kaur grew up as a Sikh in Beaver Creek. Sikhs are a faith community originally from India. Even though Sikhs are not Muslim, in the aftermath of 9/11, many people directed their anti-Muslim hate toward them because of their background and appearance.
I was 11 years old, and that kind of woke me up to the systems of injustice, for lack of a better term.
Kaur started organizing with other college students in 2012. And in late June of 2014, Kaur, Selassie, and about 24 other activists traveled to Mississippi to attend a national event commemorating the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer,
which was the time when people came all over the country to go down and work on voting rights and increasing literacy rates, and they had freedom schools and all of these things.
The Ohio Student Association, or OSA, organized the trip. OSA is a group of college students based out of Columbus.
We went down to Mississippi to sit at the feet of our elders, the Civil Rights Movement elders, Bob Moses. I mean, we went down to go like sit at their feet and learn, Julian Bond. We got a chance to kick with all of them, right?
They returned ready to mobilize.
I could see how much energy is generated when we gather towards shared mission.
The timing of this trip turned out to be more important than either one of them could have known at the time. About a month after she returned from Mississippi, Kaur was visiting with a friend in Beaver Creek when the story of Crawford's killing came on the television.
Immediately, it felt like racism was involved, just because I grew up in Beaver Creek, and so I'm aware of the racial tensions in Beaver Creek, and there was not too long prior to that, the whole controversy about the RTA bus stop.
The RTA, or Regional Transit Authority, is the public transportation system in the Dayton region.
The RTA wanted to open up, have a bus stop come right down the road from that Walmart, very close to that Walmart. And a lot of local people in Beaver Creek pushed against having that bus stop there because of the type of people that they felt were that would bring to Beaver Creek and to the area. And so the stereotypes around who rides the bus and who that would bring and the not wanting to welcome those people to Beaver Creek, basically.
In June of 2013, the Federal Highway Administration ruled that the city of Beaver Creek's decision not to allow bus stops did have a discriminatory impact on African Americans.
And so that was very fresh in my sense of awareness, as well as just my own experiences growing up as a brown girl in Beaver Creek.
Energized by the Mississippi trip, Selassie, Core, and the OSA felt a call to step up and lead the response to Crawford's killing. They started organizing, and they were intentional about letting the stated wishes of the Crawford family guide their actions.
What they wanted was the release of the tape.
That is the Walmart tape that showed what happened to Crawford. As of mid-August, Attorney General DeWine had refused to release the tape to the public.
And we did a silent protest with tape on our mouth that said, release the tape. And that was really powerful.
A few days after this march, DeWine shared the Walmart surveillance tape with Crawford's parents and attorneys in a private meeting. But the public at large would not see the tape for another month. As the grand jury began deliberating whether or not to indict the officers in September of 2014.
We did, I think 86 people did an 11.5-mile pilgrimage from Walmart to Xenia, where the grand jury was being held. And along the way, there were different spots, like maybe three main stops along the way, where community members who were not walking were set up with water, with snacks, shelter, you know, hot out. So just different ways to support those who were walking.
In Xenia, protesters stayed at a church near the courthouse for the duration of the grand jury deliberation. They hosted teach-ins and workshops, and supporters visited from all over the nation.
And it was actually during that time that I started asking myself, what is justice? Because I had a sense that no matter what happens during this grand jury, it cannot bring back the life that was lost.
It all seemed to be connecting for Core.
I made direct connections between the ways that Sikhs were murdered after 9/11 to Trayvon Martin being killed a few years prior, and then John Crawford being killed, because you have stereotyped images of somebody that, you know, create stories in people's minds around who is a threat, and then that justifies them killing these people. So I say all that to say that this was a very personal topic for me, and that's why I was involved. And so at that time, like, that shaped my whole life direction.
But if Core's deepest moment of reflection came during the Xenia protests, for Selassie, a key activating moment came on Christmas Eve of 2014. Selassie had helped organize a large demonstration at Fairfield Commons Mall in Beaver Creek, right across the street from the Walmart.
We understood that there may have been a risk of getting arrested, you know what I mean? And so, like when you organize like that, you know, you have people that are like willing to get arrested and those that were not willing to get arrested. You know what I mean? And I was actually on the not. I did not want to get arrested. So that day came and I was one of the leaders of like the singing. We had just said this was our last song. We were like, okay, we're going to do one more song and then we're done.
Demonstrators were singing inside the mall when police suddenly came in.
And, like, as soon as we started the last song, they came immediately and took me first. I was the very first person that got arrested. And there was, I think, 11 of us got arrested that day. And they split us up into different jails. Like, some went to Beaver Creek, some went to Xenia. And then, like, there's a whole support team of people locally and nationally that was, like, trying to raise bail money for us, you know, and everybody made sure everybody got out.
On New Year's Eve, Omega Church, a Black Baptist congregation with thousands of members in Dayton, invited all the protesters who were arrested at the mall.
There was different leaders, church leaders, community leaders that were there, and like they circled around us and like prayed for us. And it was like just that moment that it was like the community was saying that, like, you are not alone. You know what I mean? That, like, we stand with you in this hour.
Selassie ended up getting his charges reduced and doing community service and probation. Following the events of 2014 and 2015, he and many of the activists who were involved in these actions gained credibility as leaders in the Dayton community.
How we acted and how we treated people, you know, how we moved, I think helped solidify, quote unquote, greater trust with the community, that like when we made a call, people would respond, because, you know, we had been through the fire. You know what I mean? It's like, yo, like we're about this life. You know what I mean? And so that mattered.
Cor also described the experience in a more physical impact. Using her body to blockade streets and protect people took a toll on her. It was stressful and exhausting.
And now I know, as a healing practitioner, that all of that lives in your body. And so it's like, yeah, I'm still healing from the impact of putting my body on the line like that so intensively.
Later in the hour, we'll return to Selassie and Cor to learn how they transformed these lessons into lasting projects in the Dayton community. If you're just tuning in, this is A Matter of Impact, a look back at the decade since John Crawford III was killed. I'm Julio Mateo. Up next, we will hear from someone who was really close to this story, but has not spoken publicly about it before. Brian Jarvis was the mayor of Beaver Creek when Crawford was killed. He served on the city council from 2009 to 2017, and was mayor in 2014 and 2015. Jarvis was the city's first black mayor. We met at his home studio in a quiet neighborhood in Beaver Creek. Overall, Jarvis enjoyed being a council member.
I enjoy problem solving, and everything about that job is about being out there in the public eye, solving problems the best you can. Some issues you can't solve. Life is that way sometimes. But again, everything about it was just an excellent role to be in, and I really enjoyed that.
Jarvis described his initial reaction when he first heard about Crawford's killing.
It was probably on a news report. And my thoughts back then, you know, by August of 2014, there had already been 3 or 4 mass shootings nationwide. And my thoughts were, oh, no, not here too. What you always heard from authorities was, if you see something, say something. Don't wait for something to happen. And so my thoughts were, apparently someone saw something and said something. And then that led to what this happened. By the time I didn't know what happened yet, the details, I just knew that there had been an officer-involved shooting at Walmart.
Jarvis didn't comment much publicly on the case at the time. He said that once the state of Ohio started investigating, the city was intentionally kept in the dark. But the city of Beaver Creek settled its lawsuit with the Crawford family in 2020. And Jarvis retired from public service in 2017. So I asked Jarvis whether he'd be willing to share now what his experience was like as mayor in the months following August 5th, 2014. Immediately after I asked this question, he stopped me.
If I can take just a second here from the mic, just 1 second. You're the first person.
Do you want me to turn it off? I'll stop it?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, I'll stop it.
Yeah.
So I stopped the recording for a minute. Jarvis walked over to the other side of the room and pointed to a boxed air rifle sitting on the top shelf. He grabbed it, brought it back to his seat, placed it on his lap, and I restarted the recording.
One of the things that I needed to know, since we were kept in the dark as a council, we weren't allowed to know anything, And that was the right thing to do. I perfectly understand that. I wanted to know. And so I went online. I purchased the exact air rifle that was picked up off the shelf.
The rifle in his lab was the same air rifle, sometimes also called a pellet gun or a BB gun, that Crawford was holding when Richie called the police on him at the Walmart.
I wanted to know, if I had walked into a store and this was sitting there, would I have picked it up and walked around the store with it? And the answer is no. I would not have. When I do things, I always consider what other people's perception of my actions are. Situational awareness, I call it. Can somebody misinterpret what I'm doing and think something bad is going to happen with it? And so I can tell you, I never would have picked this up. That would be just asking for trouble. And the warning on this gives that indication too. You're going to give police and others indication that it's a real thing. The gentleman who made the phone call, the 911 call, what would I have done if I were him and I saw someone walking? I would have done the same thing. Exact same thing.
As I listened to Jarvis, it was apparent that his understanding of what happened on August 5th closely mirrored the account that Special Prosecutor Pete Meyer provided when he announced the officer would not be indicted. That the officer's actions were justified because they believed there was an active shooter.
What would you say to the response to that, saying that you're blaming the victim who didn't do anything wrong?
Yeah.
What would you respond to that?
Because the difficulty there is that Ohio is an open carry state. And you have to appreciate that. From what I've read, with ownership of a rifle, you have to carry it in a safe position, slung over your shoulder, so that people don't perceive a threat. You don't carry it down. And so it's not a blame the victim, it's what are people's perceptions who are around the victim.
What do you say to those who say that justice was not served and that nobody was held accountable for what happened to John Crawford?
Yeah, no one did something illegal. Nobody. And so you hold people accountable when they've broken some law. And this did go up through, I think, a county grand jury, some state visibility, Department of Justice. At every single level, it was considered that the police officers acted reasonably given the situation. It's a tragic, again, a tragic situation. But again, it's just a, each level looked at that and decided not to do anything because there were no laws broken.
When you look back at that time, what do you recall the most about the experience and what comes up for you?
When this incident happened, and it was real disappointing for me as a black mayor in a city that's 88% white, the first thing is that it's a racial incident. The very first thing, not time to look at it, what happened. Once you've had time to digest everything and look at all the details, then maybe some might come to the conclusion that race was involved. But right out of the chute, because it's white officers and a black man, it's a racial incident. That, to me, was disappointing. There doesn't appear to be anything racial about this. Why is that always the first go-to?
While Jarvis disagreed with some of the messages of protesters, he expressed support for the right to protest.
There were protests up and down Pentagon Boulevard and North Fairfield Road up near Walmart. Again, those are on public property. And as long as individuals don't interfere or create a hazard for drivers or themselves, that's okay. There was a sit-in at the police department, I believe, sitting out where the cars are parked in that area. Again, public property, perfectly fine. Totally supportive of that. Absolutely, it's the right to speak, and those are all good events.
Jarvis is also aware of the yearly vigils the Crawford family holds.
Every year they have one of those vigils. I drive by there. It's not a bad thing to remember. It is private property, and so there are rules in place for that. But remembering is not a problem.
I asked Jarvis what he learned through this whole experience.
This was one of, as a mayor, I could do nothing about. So it was a challenge, required a lot of thought and soul searching, but eventually you have to come to the decision that there was nothing that I could have done about it personally.
That was Brian Jarvis, who was the mayor of Beaver Creek in August of 2014 when the police killed John Crawford III. Up next...
I caught a glimpse of my mother's face. Mama! Mama! I love you, Mama! And then suddenly I was hovering high up in the air, looking down at this cop killing me.
We'll hear from a writer and organizer who made it his mission to fight for justice for Crawford and his family.
Hardly a day goes by, you know, where I don't think about the incident and the whole aftermath. It makes me angry still, you know, if I can't think about it for too long.
Before 2014, Bomani Moyenda's activism consisted primarily of writing editorials about race and culture to the local newspaper. But two moments in the aftermath of Crawford's killing were particularly impactful to Moyenda. The first moment was when The Wine released the Walmart surveillance video and the 911 call to the public after a Greene County grand jury announced there would be no indictments.
It was like a big slap in the face, and when people saw the actual video, it was really awful. It's like he just got murdered on the spot because of what this guy incited.
That day changed the way Moyenda engaged in activism.
You know, I went and bought myself a bullhorn. I'd never used a bullhorn.
Thank you all for coming out. Wow, this is like way more people than we expected. We really appreciate you all giving yourselves a hand.
That was Moyenda greeting protesters at the one-year anniversary event at the Beaver Creek Walmart. Later on, Moyenda invited protesters to lay down in front of the Walmart doors to commemorate the life and death of Crawford.
We're going to do a quick die-in right here in front of the store. Anybody wants to lay out, come on up front here. We're going to do a quick die-in.
Over the following months, Moyenda organized several vigils in honor of Crawford and many other actions. In February of 2015, a group of protesters delivered letters to U.S. Attorney Carter Stewart demanding that the Beaver Creek police officer involved in the killing of John Crawford III be put on trial, among other demands.
We are here to exercise our rights.
We are here to exercise our rights.
As law-abiding, tax-paying American citizens.
As law-abiding, tax-paying American citizens.
To peacefully assemble.
To peacefully assemble.
And to advocate on behalf of our brother John Crawford III.
And to advocate on behalf of our brother John Crawford III.
The second moment that changed Moyenda's life happened during this action.
It was bitter cold. And there was probably about 50 to 75 of us out there. And that was the day that I met the victim's father, John Crawford Jr. And he actually stood there and talked to us for, I don't know, a half an hour, you know, in that bitter cold. And I could just see the pain in his face, and I could just like feel it in my heart and in my gut. And it was that day that I told myself that I'm going to do everything I can to try to bring about some semblance of justice in this case.
In 2016, Moyenda initiated legal action against Richie, the 911 caller. The case was assigned to the same special prosecutor who oversaw the grand jury decision not to indict the police officers. That prosecutor declined to indict Richie. Moyenda appealed to the Ohio Supreme Court to no avail.
You talking about something that makes you want to scream and holler. To be treated in such a subhuman fashion, you know, it's devastating.
Moyenda and others kept on pushing for years. In 2021, he partnered with Central State University adjunct professor John Fleming to produce a play inspired by the aftermath of Crawford's killing. The play, titled What's Done in the Dark, gave a fictionalized account of the killing of a young black man, Anthony Neville, and its aftermath. It also includes commentary on real police killings, including Crawford's. This is an excerpt from a performance of the play.
This is the video of the John Crawford killing. Watch closely.
Sir, what's going on?
That 911 caller is lying his ass off. He's not even looking at anybody.
All right.
He's not even talking to anybody. Man, that man should be in jail for lying.
He should be, but he ain't. He got off just like the cop who killed John Crawford. What the hell? Are you kidding me? They said John turned towards them with the gun.
The gun was pointed towards the floor. What the hell? That's insane. How can they do that?
Look, they shot him in a heartbeat. He's still talking on the phone. I guess talking on the phone is a crime now, too.
Only if you're black.
Damn.
In What's Done in the Dark, the Attorney General, the prosecutor, and the police chief are eventually convicted of conspiracy to cover up Neville's murder and are taken to jail. Following this sentencing, Neville's soul is finally able to find peace. What's done in the dark comes to light. The plan was not for Moyenda to be in the play, but an actor wasn't able to make it, and Moyenda ended up playing the soul of George Floyd, which recounted his own murder while asking for justice.
I caught a glimpse of my mother's face. Mama! Mama! I love you, Mama. And then suddenly I was hovering high up in the air, looking down at this cop killing me. There was two of them holding me down and one standing guard, and there was this black dude there trying to shame the cop out of killing me, but every time he said something, I felt that cop press his knee even harder against my neck, even as I was floating there.
What was the impact of that for you? Like actually being on the stage, performing, playing the role of George Floyd on the play that you wrote?
It was a powerful emotional experience. I performed it twice and a couple times, you know, I just kind of had to duck back and behind the scenes, kind of fight back tears a little bit. Just to be up there, you know, mouthing those words, like, you know, there was one place where he was calling for his mother. There was, he had a line that said that, this guy just can't get enough of killing me.
I asked Moyenda what he was hoping to accomplish with the project.
It was kind of like healing for me, because, you know, I've been through all this protest shutdowns, legal actions, hard conversations, you know, no positive outcome at all. So, okay, so what about now if I take control of the story? So as I wrote it, you know, it was the whole thing, process was kind of like really healing for me, you know, because now I get to create my own reality that is separate from this madness I had to live in every day.
That was Bomani Moyenda, a Yellow Springs writer and organizer. I'm Julio Mateo, and you're listening to A Matter of Impact, a look back at the decade since John Crawford III was killed. Coming up,
I literally want to suck the wind out of the status quo.
We'll hear about actions and solutions inspired by the events of 2014. Like Moyenda, Yolanda Simpson spent the years after Crawford's death trying to imagine what could have been different and trying to make that a reality.
What is it about a situation with John Crawford III that he can't walk around a Walmart store holding a toy that is, you know, available for purchase at the Walmart store? If it's not racism, if it's not a preconceived idea that African Americans are threatening, then why are they dead? Why aren't Black lives as important as the lives of others?
In the aftermath of Crawford's killing, Simpson became more active with Black Lives Matter Miami Valley. After the grand jury decided not to indict the officers, Simpson switched her focus to police reform.
When John Crawford III happened, it was the first time I took a deep dive into how this policing thing actually works. What is qualified immunity? What is excessive force? What does this jargon mean? What about the budgeting of the police, you know, police departments? If we're going to talk about changing policing, then we need to understand how it actually works.
After conducting extensive research, Simpson compiled a set of recommended changes to improve public safety.
We have to figure out, how do we police our own communities? How do we effectively stop crime in our communities so that we don't even have to engage police officers? Our best effort is to make sure that we don't need the police. It has to be the community, and that's what we should focus on.
Simpson wants policing to be better and for there to be less of it.
25, 30 years ago, there were little boys and little girls in our community who wanted to become police officers. I want it to become okay again for those little boys and those little girls to want to become police officers, not fear them. And I think that that can happen if we, like I said, reduce the amount of policing, amount of police in our communities. Maybe we can get back to learning how to respect police officers again.
She is dedicated to keeping Crawford's memory alive.
We're never going to bring John Crawford III back to his parents, but let's use, you know, his name and make something, you know, of it, you know, his legacy, so that when his children are his age, 22 years old, they'll be able to look back at that and say, I'm so sorry that my father is gone, but look what his name has done for the country. Look what the name has done for Beaver Creek. Look what the name has done for other African Americans.
Simpson is planning a fundraiser event later this year to benefit the John H. Crawford III Memorial Scholarship. Crawford's family started the scholarship to support Ohio minority students majoring in the arts.
What we wanted to do is to remind people of the of John Crawford III, who he was before he became John Crawford III, the person who was involved in the Walmart shooting. You know, he was a person. You know, he has children. He was a son. You know, he was a father. He was all of these wonderful things. So let's celebrate his life.
The event will be on October 19th, 2024. Now we return to two people we met before, Darshil Kaur and Amaha Selassie, to learn how they transformed the lessons of 2014 into lasting projects in the Dayton community. Kaur responded by digging deeper into root causes of violence and long-term solutions. She wanted to learn more about how to handle situations like Crawford's killing in a healthier way. So she went to grad school to study conflict transformation and restorative justice.
The restorative justice is a movement in the United States to try to bring back some of these worldviews around interdependence and how, you know, we are all connected to one another. Everybody has worth and dignity. Everybody has value. And that when there is a... somebody hurts somebody else or there is a harm, that incident is not just between two people, but it's a reflection of the community as a whole, and that what is necessary in that moment is not necessarily punishment, but healing, and healing the relationships.
In 2019, CORE opened The Heart, the House of Healing Arts in Dayton. Today, The Heart is a co-living space and also a space where the community gathers to hold restorative justice circles, listen to music, and engage in other healing practices.
I'm grateful to have The Heart as a home base to constantly remind myself what is my North Star, what's truly important to me, which is like healing these historical wounds, so that I'm not operating from a place of reaction, but that I have self-determination in how I move and why I move the way that I do, and then offer that place to other people as well.
What would you like to see happen that hasn't happened yet?
I would like to see that when tragedy does occur, that we honor our grief and we honor our anger and we honor like our humanity, our emotional experiences, our spiritual experiences. Like we truly create spaces for ourselves to honor what's true in the moment in our bodies. We awaken our bodies as sites of wisdom and really aim to nourish ourselves and one another in moments of tragedy. If we feel like a tragedy occurs where there was dehumanization, that we counter that by rehumanizing ourselves and one another first, and then figuring out what we want to do from there. That's what I would like to see.
Amaha Selassie's experiences in 2014 and 2015 also had a profound effect on how he thinks about creating social change.
To me, it really solidified that, like, I don't want to give my power to begging and pleading elected officials or anybody to do something. I want to like build momentum in the community to help shape public policy. I literally want to suck the wind out of the status quo. I want to build something so compelling and so human, actually, you know what I mean? That it's like, man, like that old system is like beyond obsolete. And it's just like the whole wind is sucked out of it because it has no life no more. Because people are like, man, like why would I want this when this is possible, you know? And so like that's my goal.
Like CORE, he helped create a new space in response, the Gem City Market, a worker-owned and community-owned grocery store on the west side of Dayton, conceived to address the lack of full-service grocery stores in the area. Selassie traces the origins of Gem City Market back to the organizing that took place in the aftermath of Crawford's killing. The market opened in 2021 on Selim Avenue and has over 5,000 member owners to date. Selassie serves as the president of the board.
How do we build a world rooted in love and grace instead of a world based upon fear and competition? If I can be part of the process of grounding love as like the foundation of our society, I'm cool, I'm done.
Every activist who responded to Crawford's killing mentioned the importance of centering the Crawford family. At the end of the Walmart memorial, I asked John Crawford Jr., John Crawford III's father, about his experience over the past 10 years.
It's mentally draining. It's physically draining. You know, it wears on you. It takes part of your life is gone. You lose part of yourself, a great part of yourself, you know, and you know you're not going to get that back. That's going to be forever. The only thing you can do is cope and deal with it and kind of divert your attention to someplace else, like with the children. That's the hardest part, just knowing you're not going to see them again.
Do you want to talk about what sort of legal, like, legislation changes you would like to see that you think would make a difference?
What needs to change is we have to start holding people accountable, because we have laws in place. But if you're a prosecutor, you're not going to hold people accountable for what they do, then it's null and void. You know, there's no sense of having a law. And that's more or less what's happening right now. When you know it's wrong, don't rationalize it, don't justify it. Now you're adding insult to injury. Now you're spitting in our face. Now you're questioning our intelligence. That's when you get in trouble. When it's wrong, it's wrong.
Then I invited Mr. Crawford to dream with me.
What is the dream? Well, this certainly is not it, but I think that the dream, again, is just to teach and tell truth. You know, when they laid the blueprint, what was going on with it? All white men wrote the Constitution. That's the problem. See, everybody don't want to talk about the real issues. You have a biased side one way, period. But they make you believe like it's diverse, that we have diversity and inclusion. You don't have, this is not inclusion. That's not what this is. And that's unfortunate, because we could be, seriously, this could be a great, great country. It really could be. It has the potential. But we'll never be great as long as our entire focus is on capitalism and not people, not humanity, not humility. So when we get there, then we'll be great. Then we can say, then everybody wouldn't mind holding up the flag. There'd be no sit-ins and walkouts. That's what you call inclusion.
That's the dream.
That's the dream. That's the dream.
That was John Crawford Jr., the father of John Crawford III. You've been listening to A Matter of Impact, a look back at decades since John Crawford III was killed. In the hour, we heard from people involved in the response to Crawford's killing about how the experience impacted them and the Miami Valley. 10 years later, the Crawford family has launched a scholarship in Crawford's name. The legal battle with Walmart is ongoing, and the next court date is on February of 2025. And supporters of the family are petitioning the city of Beaver Creek to rename the street by the Walmart after John H. Crawford III. This project was edited, scored, and mastered by Louis Raven Wallace. Thanks for audio clips from Steven Bogner and Bomani Moyenda. To listen to this documentary again, go to wyso.org. You can also find it on your favorite podcasting app. For WYSO Community Voices, I'm Julio Mateo.